Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That was Taylor Lewan yesterday on the Rich Eisen Show talking about the CBA, and in a way only Taylor Lewan can do, explaining what his vote was on the CBA. He did. Just listening to him talk sometimes is hilarious to me. Welcome back into Morning Drive here with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, we talked earlier with Floyd about, you know, how this CBA, some of your big money guys like Taylor Lewan, you're probably not going to vote yes on this. I mean, we've heard Aaron Rodgers come out against it. We've heard J.J. Watt, Russell Wilson come out against it, Taylor Lewan as well. But he did say he thinks it's going to pass, and a big reason why he thinks it's going to pass is because some of these lower tier guys, you know, between, you know, year one, year five, they see the increase that they're going to get financially. And for some of those guys, I mean, you're talking about a $100,000 increase. That's a lot. I mean, that just think about if somebody offered you an $100,000 increase. I mean, I'd probably vote for that too. I mean, that's just, and I think that's a brilliant part of the negotiations and the proposal sent out there by the owners, where the numbers very likely could be on the side of the owners just based on that fact that some of these lower tier players see all these benefits that the owners have laid out there. And they say, you know what? Yeah, we'll go to 17 games for that. And that's sounding more and more likely when you hear some players around the league talk that could end up being the case.
Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of guys more in Taylor Lewan's boat. And, you know, J.J. Watt also comes to mind, being pretty vocally opposed to this thing. And it is, I mean, it's pretty well devised to, because, you know, obviously raising the floor is not as costly as other things you would do. And, of course, we don't know exactly where they're going to end up with the revenue split. But you've also got roster size that would increase, practice squads would increase. You could less restrictions on. So, like, it's all these things that basically help guys stay in the league. If you're like so many players who are trying to get in this league or trying to stick in this league, and you want to be around long enough to, a huge thing is to get the pension, which means, you know, essentially that you've got a steady income. You know, not a huge amount of money, but a steady income for the rest of your life. Lots and lots of guys come and go through this league fast. So you got those guys around the bottom look at this whole thing, and like you said, more importantly than anything, the increase in pay. And I don't blame them for being attracted to it. And I don't blame the guys at the top, even though I'm sure they're, you know, those guys have fought for the lower roster guys too. Yeah. They want them to benefit more. But if you're a guy like Taylor Lewan, 17 games sounds terrible. And, you know, that's the owners have, you know, done a good job here of making it a sweet deal for the masses.
Aaron Rodgers had some interesting comments last week that I think really stood out to me. I think he went on ESPN Milwaukee and was talking about, you know, he's the player rep for the Packers. He's been really dialed into this CBA negotiation. And he said, you know, I've sent this out to my teammates and tried to get like a kind of a feel for what's going on. Hadn't gotten a whole lot of feedback. Like, how much do you think NFL players are really paying attention? I mean, they've had to extend deadlines and make sure the votes get in. They talked about trying to get all of these people to read at least the fine points of it. Obviously, the NFL players, all of them, are not going to sit there and read a 438-page CBA. Like, it's just not going to happen. But it sounds like that there's not a heavy interest level in the details of this with a lot of NFL players, which is concerning to me. I mean, you heard Aaron Rodgers talk about it. You know, they've extended voting deadlines because of it. Some people have wanted to change their vote, like you brought up, which tells me, okay, what's changed between, you know, the time you made your vote and now? Do you have more information on it now? And if that's the case, why did you vote on it in the first place?
So you voted uninformed.
Yeah, like it's been interesting the NFL player response, and when Rodgers had those comments that he hadn't got a whole lot of feedback from his team, that stuck out to me because I mean this you're talking about a long CBA that you're voting into place if in fact that's what happens.
Well, this is where like a guy like DeMaurice Smith who has taken a lot of criticism. You know, for what he's done leading the NFLPA, like to me, take that 456-page document and cut it into two pages of bullet points and say, this is what you need to know. Everyone, please read this. We will do the job of going with all the lawyers. We're going through every single word of this thing, and we'll tell you what you need to know so that everyone is informed. You know, it's just like Cliff's notes in high school. I mean, you know, you can't read To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, you got to test quickly, you know, catch up on
Spark note that thing.
Yeah. You know, so, I mean, I don't know that they haven't done that, but like you said, if you've got people change their votes, that sounds like someone who just sort of made an uninformed vote and then was like, oh, wait, what
I didn't
about
know
this,
that,
though?
Yeah.
How does that happen? How could that? That can't happen.
And this, it doesn't seem like this happens in any other league. And we see this, you know, obviously, the MLB has gone through lockout situations. The NHL has gone through a couple of lockout situations. The NBA was locked out to start, the 11-12 season. But their players have typically been together. They've gotten good deals for themselves at the end of the day. And the NFL, the last time they went through this, the players just got hammered for how they basically just rolled over and let the NFL owners do what they want. And I see something like that happen, and then you hear reports that players like Aaron Rodgers is reaching out to people. Nobody's getting back to him. People are voting and then trying to change their votes because I guess they're uninformed on what they're voting on. Why is this happening with NFL players where it just doesn't seem like they're fully invested in their futures with the CBA? And it doesn't seem like that's the case in other sports, at least to the same degree.
Well, again, I'm going to go back to leadership of the NFLPA. One, that's you've got to look at that and say, what are you doing to make sure everyone is informed and also that everyone's on the same page? But I will say that it's a different situation. This league, I mean, you are cut on a dime. Careers are so fast. You know, it's very different from other leagues in terms of guaranteed money and length of career and all that stuff. I mean, it's a brutal sport. It is just, it's a different deal than other sports. And so you've also, as we've discussed, you've got people in very, very different situations. You've got that upper crust of guys who, you know, make generational money and have long careers and speak for people to a large extent. Then you've got a lot of people who, again, are just trying to get to the pension, just trying to make enough money to put in the bank to set themselves up for whatever they're going to do for the rest of their life because they aren't making money that's going to feed their families for the next couple generations. I mean, and those people are – it's just very different. It's not that there aren't differences among people in other sports, but I think it's a more stark contrast in this league. And I just – I'm still – it just – I think it's probably going to pass – and I just hate the 17th game really bothers me because, again, I think the people who understand what that means and are most opposed to it, they're going to be overruled. And, like, I get it because a lot of guys are going to benefit from this at the on the floor of the labor pool. But, man, it just bothers me that the NFL is going to ram through a 17th game in this era of quote-unquote player safety mattering.
Well, and I think Taylor Lewan called it a short-term fix to a long-term problem with some of the votes that maybe your lower-tier players are going to try to get passed through in terms of the financial compensation. But let's not forget, the owners don't want to stop at 17 games.
Yeah, exactly.
This is eventually a path to get to 18 games.
And because that, everyone's going to freak out about, oh, it's not fair, right. 9 and 8, oh, we got to have even games. And you're not going backward.
Yeah, so that's another thing you have to remember if you're a player, that if you think this is going to stop from the owner's perspective at 17 games, I think you're crazy. Like that, maybe that's where it sits for a while and rests for a while, But eventually, this is a pathway for the owners to do everything they can do to try to get those 18 games, because that's what they've been talking about for a while here, 18 games. And you think 17 games is bad on the body? I mean, 18 games, I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, absolutely. Now, this is a, you know, this CBA is supposed to be a 10-year CBA. You know, so, I mean, presumably, you know, I mean, so that's the weight. But, yes, there's no question that's what they're trying to get to. And then they'll take away another preseason game, which means nothing to get there. So, but I'd love to know who wants to change their vote and why. You know, I'd love to know, like, how many, who, and what is it? What is this new information that you came across when you should have been informed from the start that now makes you want to change your vote?
And also, like, it seems like in other sports, when there are big-name players stepping out and kind of leading the way on CBA discussions, that most of the players fall in line behind that. And I get that the NFL is very different in that aspect, because in the NHL, you're talking about guaranteed contracts, MLB, NBA as well. So that part of it's very different. But it seems like, you know, you've got Aaron Rodgers, you know, J.J. Watt, all of these different big-name guys that have been outspoken by it. And I think a lot of casual fans would say, okay, well, if those guys who are the faces of the NFL and the leaders in the NFL, if they're outspoken against it, surely, you know, the rest of the league is just going to fall in line. And that just, I think the exact opposite's going to happen. I really think this thing's going to pass.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it's well played. It's well played by the owners, because it is like politics, like Floyd said earlier, you know, what appeals to the masses, you know, and in politics, a lot of times that's playing the middle, but in this case, you know, the masses, more guys are in a situation of trying to hold on to really brief careers as long as they can, and this really benefits those guys.
We'll continue this discussion on the other side. Taylor Lewan also had some more comments on the Rich Eisen Show that we'll play for you next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Taylor Lewan yesterday on the Rich Eisen Show talking about moving the schedule to 17 games. And it was interesting. He was talking about, you know, playing in 15 games last year, Joe. Obviously, he was suspended for 4 games, 12 games in the regular season for Lewan, 3 playoff games. He says, "You look, my body's tired after 15 games. You know, you make the jump from college where you're playing in 12 games, moving to the NFL where it's 16, and now you want to play another one?" Like, I mean, guys like Taylor Lewan, who are playing pretty much every offensive snap, I mean, this is 16 games takes enough of a toll. 17, and then let's just say you play 17 games, you're a wild card team, you get through the playoffs. I mean, you're talking 20, 21 games at that point that you've got to go out and play. Body's really going to be hurting at that point.
Yeah, right. I mean, so again, hey, that's why they collectively bargain. You guys vote for it. That's your lot.
You.
That's
yeah.
Your lot in life. And again, this is probably going to illustrate the difference between the upper crust and the rest of the league. But like, just from a fan perspective, like, I hate the 17th game so much, mostly from the player safety perspective and just the hypocrisy that comes with it and the greed. Because my gosh, how much money do you need here?
NFL makes a lot of money.
Like, just
plenty.
But just take it from a fan perspective. I mean, again, my entire life of watching football, and it's been a while now, has been with a 16-game schedule. So this has not been a thing that has been necessary over many other, you know, negotiations when there was a lot less revenue than there is now. And the 16-game schedule, there's something about it. There, you know, the single-season records, this has been since the mid-70s that we've had this 16-game schedule. So there's a certain, like, you understand, like, 2,000 yards, what that means in the context of a 16-game season. All the, so, again, I know that that's a minor part of this, but as a fan of the NFL, someone who has watched it for, you know, 40 years now, that really bothers me that because they just have to have this more revenue, they're going to do this. And like you said, Robbie, it's the half step on the way to 18. And I understand the idea of, well, February is a dead month. What about just taking over February? But again, do you have to be this greedy? It just really, really bugs me. And that is that's just the fan side of it, which is not as important. But I can't recall talking to anyone who likes this. And I understand someone could say, why would you complain about more football? More football? I mean, that's what I say to people who complain about bowl games. I'm like, well, look, you can make fun of the, you know, Poulon Weed Eater Independence Bowl if you want, but it's football versus not football. But in this case, we don't need it, man.
615-737-1025. What are your thoughts on the proposed CBA? What do you think about 17 games in the NFL? We'll take your calls. We'll take your texts at 615-737-1025. John Glennon from The Athletic scheduled to join us at 7:30, so we'll get his take on this as well. I did find it interesting that Taylor Lewan made sure to point out, like, look, I mean, I understand that the owners, why they would want to do this, and you don't typically hear that from players. They don't really give the owners credit for really anything when it comes down to this. But I do like the tone that Lewan takes in this interview with Rich Eisen, and maybe this is just me reading too much into it, is that he's pretty much, you know, come to the realization that this is probably going to pass. Like, he can vote the way he's voted on it, and that's fine. But at the end of the day, I think Taylor Lewan is pretty confident. He basically said as much in the interview that this is going to pass, and we're going to move to a 17-game schedule. I don't think the playoff thing really anybody has any issues with. But I think it just sounds like when reading the room, you know, Aaron Rodgers, J.J. Watt, Russell Wilson, I think they're pleading their case as loudly as they can, and I'm not sure there's many people that are listening. And I think that's been frustrating for them.
Yeah, he did sound resigned. He will give the owners credit in a passive-aggressive way for their greed.
Yes.
But, no, I mean, he did. He sounded resigned to this. So, I mean, all the tea leaves seem to be indicating, you know, that this would pass. And, again, it doesn't surprise when you consider what it does for the bulk of guys who are not those top guys. I guess I'll be surprised if it's a different outcome. And, of course, the deadline has been, as we said earlier, the deadline has been moved from Thursday at 11:59 to Saturday at 11:59.
Let's go to Adam, who wants to weigh in on the CBA. Adam, thanks for calling into ESPN 102.5 The Game.
No problem, man. I just want to say, you know, I know it was priority like 10,000 for them to fix you guys' phone lines, but I was really lost this past week not being able to call you guys about this stuff. But
we're glad you're back.
Yeah, man. So I don't really care if they add games on the end. I will say, as a season ticket holder, the preseason sucks so bad, and I can't even give tickets away to the preseason. And I wish they would find – I mean, I guess that was proposed. I don't know all the details, but fixing that should be priority number one. Like, that, condense it, make a wrestling match at halftime. I don't know, man. Just make the preseason better. Make me want to go and at least see. I mean, we went this year, and we played the Patriots, and Brady didn't even play. He didn't even step on the field. That sucked so bad, man. So they got to fix that one first. That's number one.
Thanks for the call, Adam. Appreciate it.
Well, it's getting worse.
Well, the problem with that is it's not even just the preseason and the games. It's that you're charging the same price for it. Like, you're charging the same price to go to a preseason game for the fan that you are for a regular season game, and that's ridiculous. Yeah, I mean, that shouldn't be the case.
The Titans changed that last year, which, again, like, you can – it's the overall cost of your season ticket is what matters. Like, you can dice it up any way you want.
Yes.
But, yes, as a single-game ticket, I agree. That needs to be – I mean, it should be dramatically less around the league for people who are buying single-game tickets. You know, season ticket, you're going to divide it up over over the 10 games. But, you know, here's the problem with the preseason. And it wasn't that long ago. You could go – you go the third game, and you know you're going to see starters for a half.
Yeah.
And now the safety concerns have affected it so much – I mean, you know, we've already known the fourth game has been pretty much worthless for a long time, but more and more it's like, yeah, I'm not putting a guy out there for this. And so the problem then from the owners is, well, these are two gates that we count on along with our eight home gates. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do in return?
Let's go to Corey, who wants to weigh in on the CBA. Corey, thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I don't have a problem with them going to a 17th game. What I have more problem with is the fact that they're also adding a playoff game. So they're kind of de facto, for some guys, actually going to 18 games already. And they're kind of being sly about it. And they're kind of, in a way, cheapening the playoffs a little bit more. It's kind of like they're getting that extra there. I do like them still having some preseason games, because it's a chance for guys that aren't the star guys to earn a job. So I like that, but they should price it to where it's a promotional, it's a marketing thing. It's like, hey, you've never been to a ball game. We're going to make it very price friendly to come in. You're not going to see the stars, but you're going to get a chance to experience an NFL atmosphere. And I think they kind of need to think about that more in those regards.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Corey. I completely agree. I think when you think about just the prices of the preseason games, but also, you know, adding that extra game. He's right. Like, if you're a Packers fan this year, let's say you're playing a 17-game schedule, you get the 2 seed in the NFC. Normally, you're having a first-round bye. Well, under this new system, you're playing on wild card weekend.
You're playing, yeah, right away.
That's an extra game right there that maybe that we haven't even really thought about. I mean, the Chiefs, the same way. They get the 2 seed. They go all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, at that point, you're thinking that's 21 games right there for the Chiefs.
Yeah, and you in some situations, you cheapen part of the regular season too, because, again, the Chiefs and the Patriots, you know, those games were huge, and, of course, that was a factor in the Titans making a run. And if it was this system, it was just the Ravens have the one, and who cares what else anybody else is? Like, 2 and 3 doesn't matter. You're not getting a bye either way. Now, there's different ways it could play out where, you know, multiple teams are in play for the one. That'll happen too. But no, it's a good point. It is. It is a sneaky addition. Again, like the playoff part of it, just on its own, like, I don't hate the idea of a triple header on wild. You know, like,
sure.
I don't think it's too much. I'm much more bothered by the 17th game, but Corey's right. You add them together, and man, that's a really different workload than we have now in this league.
When we come back, our good friend John Glennon from The Athletic will join us. We'll get into this discussion with him. That's next on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the great Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And speaking of The Athletic, we bring in, Joe, one of your cohorts now. Our good buddy John Glennon joins the show. John, how's it going, my man?
It goes well. How are you guys?
Doing very well. John, we've had some interesting discussions this hour about the CBA, the negotiations that are taking place, and we played some comments from Taylor Lewan on the Rich Eisen show where he basically said that he expects this to pass even though he voted against it. And I think the conclusion that Joe and I have come to is the owners have done a good job of making this appeal to maybe some of the lower-tier players who see the immediate increase in, you know, benefits, salaries, that they may not otherwise have gotten. And for some of these guys, I mean, that can make a huge difference in their day-to-day lives. And because of that, we have a feeling this is going to pass. What are your thoughts on the way the CBA is structured and whether or not you think it's going to pass when this vote is finalized?
It's fascinating to me, especially the the story that also came out last night that a number of players had requested to change their votes last night, but you know the NFLPA, I guess the board or the representatives basically said no, you can't change your votes at this point. It's too late. But clearly, there was some more information delivered at some point that made a lot of these guys question the original vote. But I think you're on the right track in saying that the biggest appeal of this CBA is to the guys that are making the least amount of money right now. They see that immediate bump. They don't know how long they're going to be in the league. They don't know what kind of money is going to be secure for the next several years. So they look at this immediate bump and they say, hey, I'm jumping in. You know, if that means playing a 17th game and risking health, you know, whether that leads to an extra a playoff game, these kinds of concerns aren't as significant aren't on the front of the mind of these guys as much as, hey, I got to grab what I can when I can. And yeah, as a result, it may pass despite the fact that a number of the bigger names in the NFL, some of the bigger representatives have said that they're going to vote no on this.
Yeah, it seems like a crafty proposal here, because if you can appeal to the masses, then, you know, that's what matters, right? I mean, you're gonna get the votes, and it's going to ram through. Unfortunately, in my mind, with this 17th game. But, John, you've been doing a lot of GM playing lately. I mean, this week you are – like, you are putting on the J-Rob hat. Do you have the big chaw in? two to go with that?
I've got three. I've taken his, and I've also added Mike Vrabel's size dip as well. So I'm doubling up for this exercise.
What a legend. That is a big, what a legend. That's a mouthful. Well, first of all, so a couple of really interesting pieces on theathletic.com that you've been a part of. First of all, our whole NFL team redrafted. So redrafted 2017, and I like one of your picks, and I got a problem with one of them, okay?
You got beef?
I got beef with – so first of all, so obviously if you think about a 2017 redraft, like, okay, the Browns, yep, they're taking Mahomes, number one. You know, the Niners, they're taking Watson, which is funny, so the Bears still get screwed, and they take Myles Garrett, number three. But at five, instead of Corey Davis, who is not going anywhere in the first round on a redraft, you go with Tre'Davious White. I really like that one. Tre'Davious White for this team at corner. That would he'd look pretty good back there. Now you go through, and of course, anybody who wants to read this, there's a lot of different picks. Obviously, a lot of people, you know, like Alvin Kamara goes higher, you know, a lot of guys like that. But you take Cooper Kupp at 18 instead of Adoree Jackson. Now, I like Cooper Kupp just fine.
I sense your disbelief on that by your tone already.
I mean, I like Cooper Kupp fine, but I swear this is not a Detroit Lions slappy call. Man, I'm going Kenny Golladay right there. Kenny Golladay, I think, is going to be a star in the league. But that's just my little, you know, that's my only little nitpick with it. Now, you also, and I want to get to your GM for a day that's out today because it's really interesting. Tell us about that, like your big items of what you are doing right now in real life if you're John Robinson facing the situation with the Titans.
Yeah, and you know, not that anybody didn't know this before, but the more I went through this and the more hours I spent on this, I realized the challenge that John Robinson has in front of him this offseason. You know, I was kind of expecting sort of a lighthearted, you know, just a real easy cruise and you know, making some easy decisions for the sake of this story. But you know, even without going through the intricacies of the cap like John Robinson has to do, boy, this offseason is more difficult, I think, than almost any other offseason I can remember for the Titans. So some of the moves that I made initially, you know, I think the Titans are going to open with about $50 million in cap space. I think they could certainly use a little bit more, as any team could. So, you know, a couple of the guys I think are going to have to be cut, a couple of veterans. I think the easiest one is probably Deion Lewis. You know, it's going to open some cap space. There's a guy who, you know, certainly wasn't very productive last year and is making too much money for the role he occupies now. I think that's a pretty easy call. Now, some of the more difficult calls are guys like Delanie Walker, Cameron Wake, guys who are making a lot of money and weren't productive last year, starting to get up in years, certainly. But could they have a rebound in them? Do they provide leadership? And might you renegotiate a contract with those guys instead of just cutting them? You know, those are options there as well. In terms of tags, you know, I like, I'm giving the franchise tag to Derrick Henry here. You know, as I said in the story, I kind of loved what he brought to the Titans. Who wouldn't love what he brought to the Titans last year? Led the NFL in rushing. You know, was certainly a huge part of the 1-2 punch he and Ryan Tannehill were. But I'm terrified of the precedent of long-term second contracts to running backs. You know, there's just so much evidence we've seen that it does not work out for the best. So I see the best course of action on Derrick Henry is to go franchise, you know, bring him back, bring everything he has back for a year. He gets paid an average of the top five salaries. It's not ideal for him, certainly, and I can understand why he might not be happy about it because he doesn't get the long-term security. But if you're from the Titans standpoint, I like that move better because you're not necessarily tied down for years and you're not running the risk of ending up with a Todd Gurley contract or Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson where things don't work out after the first or the second year.
John Glennon from The Athletic on the line with us. And, John, it's looking more and more like losing Jack Conklin could become a real possibility for the Titans, just given how much money he might make on the open market. How does that kind of shift the Titans' plan? We've talked all offseason long about maybe trying to go out and add a pass rusher, whether that's in free agency or in the draft. But if they lose Jack Conklin, how much could that derail John Robinson's plans or plans we think he might have to go get a pass rusher when now all of a sudden you have to address the right tackle position as well?
You do, certainly. I mean, that, you know, having that strong offensive line, especially in terms of the running game, is essential to the Titans. So, you know, Jack Conklin, I think, is definitely the best right tackle on the market, probably the best tackle in general on the market. So if he's gone, that does significantly alter the Titans' strategy. I don't know if it's a great crop of tackles in free agency. I think there's a guy, you know, Brian Bulaga from Green Bay is a guy who kind of might fit that Conklin mold, but he's about 5 years older than Conklin. So if Conklin's gone, I think that leads the Titans to probably taking a tackle in that first round. This is a pretty deep draft when it comes to tackles. I think your immediate priority if Conklin leaves is to go tackle in that first round and get somebody who can hopefully plug and play.
So to quickly recap what you've done, you're signing Tannehill 4 years, around 30 a year. You're franchising Henry, that's about 12 and a half. You're transition tagging Conklin, which according to your numbers here, 14.6. Now, of course, you know, other teams certainly might offer more, but you have the right to match that way. Logan Ryan can't stay. You're not picking up Corey Davis's option. I thought you had an interesting point here, a free agent, Kyle Van Noy. Not a sexy name out there, not one of the big name people, but which, like you said, you go through the numbers, you're like, man, they don't have the money, but maybe right. A guy who can at least give you a little bit more juice on the outside.
Yeah, it would be nice, certainly, to haul in all your remaining free agents and to add a Jadeveon Clowney. If there was no salary cap, sure. Those are all the right moves. But at some point, money obviously starts to figure into the equation here. And if you bring back, say, three of those top four guys, you're not going to have a ton of cap space left, I don't think. Now, I don't have a trusty capologist telling me otherwise, but I suspect things might be starting to get a little bit tighter at that point. So I like Kyle Van Noy. I like what he did last year with the Patriots because they, you know, he'd been sort of an all-round linebacker for the Pats or for teams previously, but the Pats made him much more of a pass rusher last year, and he was excellent. He had career highs, 6.5 sacks, 15 quarterback hits, and he was also very good against the run, which I think the Titans need on the edge too. Harold Landry's strength is going after the passer. He isn't necessarily great against the run. So I think Kyle Van Noy is a guy that can bring you a little bit of both and not break the bank, you know, for an average salary of probably about, just over $8 million or so.
John Glennon from The Athletic has been our guest here on Morning Drive. JG, thanks so much for joining us this morning, man. We appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Yep, absolutely. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion on the CBA and 17 games. How's that going to affect the Titans this next year? How could it affect them in terms of their negotiations with some of these free agents that we just laid out there with John Glennon? That'll be next. 102.5 The Game is your local donation station. We're accepting donations to help in the tornado disaster relief efforts. The Nashville Community Resource Center is in need of the following items: tarps, roll plastic, hand sanitizer, laundry detergent, work gloves, and trash bags, just to name a few. We'll take those donations Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. at our studio located at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike here in Nashville. To see the full list of items that can be donated, visit thegamenashville.com/donations. We'll be right back here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Thanks to John Glennon of The Athletic for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, something interesting that we've brought up here in the show today, when talking about the CBA and negotiations ongoing right now between the NFL and the NFLPA, you mentioned there that John Glennon has the Titans giving the transition tag to Jack Conklin to at least be able to try to match offers that could come in around the league. Well, if this new CBA goes into effect, one of those tags, whether the franchise tag or the transition tag, is going to be cut, and that could pretty dramatically affect the way that John Robinson and the Titans go about addressing their free agent situations. You know, if you end up in a situation where you have to franchise tag either Ryan Tannehill or Derrick Henry, and you still want to use that transition tag on Conklin, maybe you're not able to do it at that point. It is going to be interesting to see how these negotiations impact the way the Titans try to negotiate with some of their impending free agents, or whether or not it has any effect at all. I mean, I think both general managers and players would prefer not to use the tags if they could at all help it. But sometimes it's just necessary to do so, and the Titans very well could find themselves in a situation like that this year.
Yeah, I think to Glennon's point, I mean, I've been sitting here like, oh, sign him, and
yeah,
long term, and you know, but go through the numbers. I mean, I think, you know, again, he went through what, $18 million in cap money you can cut.
Yeah,
the only one of them that I really wonder about is Cam Wake, but I'm probably wrong, and he's probably a casualty too. I wonder if you're John Robinson looking at this, if you just think about it in terms of one tag and don't mess around with the transition tag, just because, you know, if this goes through, then that has to change your strategy. So maybe just go with a strategy that doesn't include it. The franchise tag of Derrick Henry is a really interesting thought. Like, I understand it. You know, he's a running back, and you're talking about, you know, the thing with that, that I think would be really tough for Henry. It's not just, you know, the tag and one term or 1 year deal, but also like $12.5 million is not what he's looking for. And I mean, I think you should pay him more than that. So, you know, Henry's a guy who I buy all the stuff about him being a team first guy and all that. No doubt. I mean, he not one time in those first 2 years when he was a backup to DeMarco Murray, was there any sign at all of discontent? I mean, he's done everything you'd want him to do, but I wouldn't blame him for being ticked off if he got tagged. And so that's going to be real. It's a really interesting choice, because you can make the case the other way around of, you know, signing him to a deal, understanding all the stuff about running backs and what second deals have been lately in the league for running backs, and then tagging Tannehill.
Yeah, I mean, that's a risk. I mean, look, I get it. I totally understand the running back position. It's just not viewed the same way as a whole as it used to be. I think, just from my vantage point, Joe, you tell me if you disagree, I think this situation's different. I just think Derrick Henry means so much to what this team can do. We saw it in the playoffs. When he's on and when he's dialed in and taken over games, I mean, for a couple games in the playoffs, he was the best player in the league. I mean, he was. That's just the way it was. And look, is he going to be at that level all the time after he signs this contract? No. But I think he's going to be pretty close to it. And I think, you know, he's 26 years old. You mentioned yesterday, his first 2 years in the league, he really didn't have that many carries. Now, I do realize when you go back to Alabama and his days there, he had a ton of carries at Alabama, a ton of carries in the SEC, a ton of contact in the SEC, and you can't just totally discount that. But I feel okay about Derrick Henry in terms of a long-term contract. And when we're talking a long-term contract with running backs, you know, we're talking 4 years, 3 years, 4 years, somewhere in that area. He's probably going to push for five or six. But I think the Titans, you'd be comfortable, at least in my opinion, going until he's probably 30 years old at that point. So I understand that the running back position as a whole around the league is viewed very differently. And in most cases, to be quite honest with you, the franchise tag probably makes sense. I just don't know if that's the route I'd take with this one.
I wouldn't either. And again, I'm spending other people's money, but I think he's the centerpiece. And you can say, man, he midway through 2018, they were looking to trade him. But the bottom line is, he just had an entire season and postseason of demonstrating his value. And I think it's a 4 year deal, about right in the range of $15 million a year. And people may balk at those numbers, but I just hate the idea that because, you know, there are recent examples of second contracts for running backs being mistakes, like that somehow applies to Derrick Henry. That's just how it's worked out. You know, some guys have been hurt. I mean, Todd Gurley is a guy who clearly injuries have been, you know, part of his story. I can, you know, we're going to have Jerry Stackhouse on later. It's the same thing with me, like with the, you know, NBA, former NBA players as college coaches. So because, you know, Chris Mullin and some of these other guys haven't worked out as college coaches, what does that actually have to do with Jerry Stackhouse particularly?
Nothing. They're
different people, different experiences, different approaches, all that stuff. Derrick Henry is not the same guy as any of these other running backs who hasn't worked out. And at 26 years old, with the durability he has displayed, with tread not really off the tires in his first 2 years, I'm sorry, I'm spending other people's money. I'm comfortable giving him a deal. And if I'm using the tag, I'm using it on Tannehill and not on Henry.
Ron from Indiana writes in and says, if I was Henry or J-Rob, I'd give Henry a short-term contract around 3 years, which should give us the best years of Henry and gives Henry a chance to get another contract from some other team after that. The contract has to have a lot of guaranteed money in there for him to take it, but I think both sides would be happy.
I don't know.
Derrick Henry be happy with a three-year deal?
Well,
I think he'd be looking for more than that.
Yeah, but it's not that thought is not crazy. I mean, think about Logan Ryan. Logan Ryan came here 3 year, $30 million with the idea of, I'm going to get another crack at this. I'm going to play well. I'm going to prove myself. And then I'm going to be a free agent of value again in my career. You could look at it that way.
Now, the flip
side is, I think most guys would rather have the longer-term deal and the security. But I agree, if you have a lot of guaranteed money in a deal like that, there is a case to be made for it.
Now, the flip side of that is, if you're Derrick Henry, you view that as, yeah, maybe I get the guaranteed money. But what is the second contract after that going to look like? Because at that point, he's going to be 29 years old and a running back. Like, it's different at that position. You got to factor that in as well.
You're right. I think specifically at that position, if there's a choice either or of, you know, you got a long-term deal or do you want another crack later, you're right. Basically, already we're talking about, I don't know, without a 26-year-old guy at the absolute top of his game who just dominated two playoff victories. And still, it's running back. So what is the discussion when he's 29 and – if he's not quite as dominant, it's certainly a diminished value.
Yeah, and that's why it's a tough time in this league to be a running back. And it's also, I think, tough as a general manager to figure out exactly what to do. I think the Henry situation is a little bit more unique because that's basically what the Titans do. Like, look, I mean, Melvin Gordon, he went into, you know, holdout negotiations, didn't have a whole lot of leverage. I mean, Austin Eckler just got a deal from the Chargers. Le'Veon Bell held out with the Steelers, didn't have a ton of leverage. The Titans, they feel different. Like for instance, like the Cowboys, Ezekiel Elliott was holding out. The Cowboys knew eventually they're going to have to pony up and pay him because they do so much through Ezekiel Elliott that he's the central piece of that offense. I feel similarly about Derrick Henry, even though he's not quite the same receiving threat out of the backfield that Elliott is.
Yeah, I mean, he's never going to be that. He's never going to be a guy like that. And those are the guys, the Bell, Kamara, Zeke, to a little bit lesser extent, but still, he's good catching the ball in the backfield.
Yeah.
He's never going to be that guy. So he's never going to be that guy, but he also may never be all these other guys people talk about who have flopped in their second deal. So it's
– it can't be a happy medium.
Yeah. Look, if you're the Titans, you're making that point. The bottom line is you're making that point at the table about, hey, these other guys don't come off the field. And you do, and so you have to take that into account. But to me, there's so much value anyway, despite that he's just a different case to me.
I agree. It's going to be really interesting to see how John Robinson handles this and what exactly Derrick Henry is looking for. I mean, we've heard the comments that he had on the Rich Eisen show saying that Zeke Elliott's contract was the floor. He later clarified those comments on Bussing with the Boys with Taylor DeJuan that he misunderstood Rich Eisen's question. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly what Derrick Henry and his camp are looking for as the Titans move forward here. When we come back, it's a big game tonight for the Nashville Predators against the Montreal Canadiens, launching a big week for them in the standings. They're really tight around those wild card positions. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.